and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 411. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is a very special edition of the podcast. It's Glenn Fox.
Hello there.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Good. I'm sad to see Emily's not here today.
She's away being Harry Potter.
Yeah, as you do.
At the Harry Potter studios that there are up in near London, which I have actually visited. Have you visited? Have you gone and done a Hogwarts, Glenn?
I haven't. I'm actually quite sad about that. I did love Harry Potter as a youth. What about you? Did you like it?
I was about 7 years too late for Harry Potter, really. but being a film nerd, I did do all the movies and was fascinated by the amazing English cast supporting the not-quite-so-amazing child actors through
yes.
eight sometimes agonisingly long and annoying films. But some of them are good. Third one's good, like that. Alfonso Cuarón, he's a good director. Good stuff, and Rickman's always watchable and all that business. But even as a non-Potterish person, I was just really impressed to see all the sets.
Yeah, I can imagine they're gorgeous.
Like, that's the nice thing for me. Like, I don't, you know, whether I like or dislike the films, just wandering around those actual physical sets and being on a movie set, basically, I really liked that. I totally enjoyed it more than I thought it would. So I'm sure she's having a whale of a time being, as she is herself, a Potterist, a Potterian. What do you call Harry Potter fans?
Harry Potterian? I don't know. We have to come up with a new thing.
You should know, I'm an outsider in these things. But yeah, she's away today, which is a shame because she's going to miss out on the big chat. This is a special event that comes but once a year. It's like Christmas, only it's slightly nerdier. And it's the time when the new iPhones are announced. And we've not got one, we've not got two, three new iPhones, Glenn. The 10th anniversary of the Apple iPhone, and it's gone expensive.
Yeah, you could say that. I don't think we can blame this one on Brexit either.
Well, it's a bit of both. one of the other. So we don't have an interview this week because we frankly don't have the time. We need to break down this whole iPhone 8, 8s and X, or 10, depending on how you want to look at it, business. We'll also throw in some additional news about updates and bits and bobs, plus new releases this week, the most exciting for me of which is Iron Marines. It's finally here. The Kingdom Rush boys, they've come out with a new game. Is it any good? Of course it is. We're going to talk about that and more very soon. But first, the news. Fast RMX. This is a Nintendo Switch game, which you reviewed, Glenn.
Yep, loved it.
Wipeouty 1, which, yeah, you really liked it. Sort of a cut price, you know, cheapy download affair, about like 15 to 20 bucks. But it was fun, and I did the video review for it, and I thought it looked nice. Couldn't actually play it, but read your words, and they were nice words, so there you go. There is a new update which introduces 6 new tracks and 2 brand new cups. The update is free, which is very good news for anybody who has a game and likes getting updates. So it's called the Remix Update. You can go and grab that right now if you happen to own the game. Another thing, with the introduction of iOS 11, and we've been seeing this with like 10 as well, the talk about 64-bit games, moving from a 32-bit to 64-bit OS, means games need to be updated. Apps need to be updated so they all run on the new system. We've talked about in the past how this means that developers who maybe don't have the time or the resources to do this, their games are going to simply have to vanish from the App Store. We're not going to play them anymore. It's a bit of a bummer,
isn't it?
It is a bit of a shame. But one developer who is bringing all of his stuff up to date, Radian Games, the guy who's responsible for a lot of these neon-tinged twin-stick shooters, is updating his entire catalogue. So we're talking about games like Inferno and Inferno 2, Joy-Joy, Fluid SE. These are games that we've reviewed and done video reviews for as well because they're really good. It's a guy who he's kind of... You could say he's a one-trick pony in so much as a lot of his games are twin-stick shooters that feel very similar. But they do have their own little twists on them each time. And most importantly of all, the controls are bang on.
I can't remember which one I've played. I know I've played one of them. I can't remember which one, though. Probably the latest, whatever it was called.
In truth, if you played one, you sort of played them all already.
Yeah.
But that's not a slur. Like, it's a really good system that he's cooked up, and he does it almost better than anyone else. We've been a big champion of him and his work in the past. So we advise you to go and have a look at these games. We've listed them all over on Pocket Gamer, but Radiant Games is the name of the developer. Just go into the App Store, search for Inferno 2, for example, or Joy Joy, all one word, and you'll be able to find his catalogue. Just grab one of them, see if you like it. They are really worth dipping into, and if you buy them, they will not vanish with the introduction of iOS 11, so this is good news. Finally, for the little newsy bit before we go full iPhone mental, Inks has been released as free on the App Store. This is a pinball game that was originally a premium thing. These are the guys behind Luminosity, or Luminosity, or however you want to say it. And it was a really lovely thing, which a pinball game, the idea of which there's kind of ink on the ball, and as you play and smack the ball all over the screen, it leaves trails all over the place, and you end up drawing pretty patterns. It's fun, if a bit sort of on the simple side, but it's free. So it's for about a week or so, you've got a chance to grab it. We recommend you go and grab it, because, you know, nothing to lose. Inks is the name. Now then, let's get straight to it. So,
yes.
The Apple conference has come. We discussed what might have happened last week, and we now, living in the present, know what has happened. Three brand new phones have been announced. We've got the iPhone 8, the iPhone 8 Plus, and the iPhone X, or 10, which has probably been the one that's got the most attention. Yes. I watched the conference. I don't know if you got a chance to do it. We know M did, because she was up there doing the full live blog, and of course all the information is over on PG, and we really recommend you go and have a look to see what you're looking at, because this generation of iPhones, it offers a slightly different proposition to the previous years. I mean, generally speaking, they've announced one phone. This is our new phone, back in the early days. Lately they started announcing two, so you end up with the, you know, the 5 and the 5S, and that's how it's kind of gone from there on outwards. So the last one was a 7, and you had a 7S. So normal sized one, slightly bigger one with a slightly, you know, juicier processor, or slightly more RAM or whatever, bigger screen. This time you wind up with a 3-pronged thing. We're going to talk about the 8 first. So we've got the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 8S. Initial reactions, Glenn, when you saw just the 8 and the 8S, what did you think?
Thought it was a bit odd that they called it the 8 rather than the 7S, because it's kind of the same phone, maybe with a slightly powerful, like, more powerful processor stuck in it. But ultimately, it's kind of just the standard Apple upgrade, isn't it? The new iPhone that's a slightly better than the old one in some ways, but not massively, and doesn't cost you an arm and leg to things. So, I mean, there's not, I don't know, there's nothing really to complain about or by that same token, like, you know, scream for joy about. It's kind of just the next standard upgrade by Apple, yeah. Unless you've got any more hot takes.
Well, to look at it, I think you're about right. So what you're getting is essentially a very similar shell and some very similar, you know, stats attached to it. So again, a 4.7-inch version of the phone for the iPhone 8, that what they call Retina display, but it's like 1334 by 750 pixel display, and then you've got the 5.5-inch 1080p version for the 8 Plus. That's the same as you've got on the 7 and the 7 Plus, and, you know, we're kind of used to that now, and the 6 as well. 6 had the same screen. So to look at it from the front, looks exactly the same as the other two. If you turn around the back, you've got this nice sort of shinier design thing going on. I assume this new glass stuff goes through both the X and the standard iPhone 8 and 8S. I think that's right, isn't it?
I'd hope so, but I'm not 100% sure, actually. I haven't looked into it that much. I've kind of been blindsided by the X, to be honest.
I know what you mean. Mostly. I just checked. Yes, they're all glass this time, which was the thing that I actually liked most about it, weirdly, because I've always maintained that the best looking iPhone ever released was the 4S model. Yeah. Because it had the metal sides, it was square rather than that curved edge that we've got now, but it was a kind of right-angled edge with a metal border around the sides of the phone and a hardened glass back over the top of
the... Yeah, they've brought that back, haven't they, for both models? Yeah.
That was the best-looking design. Yeah, it does mean that when you drop it, it's smashed on the back rather than dented, and I think that's maybe what put them off. But apparently it's hardened glass now, so it should be all right. But
and
I think
harder to scratch, I've heard, as well. So that's a good thing.
I can only imagine they've been spent so much time with the creating things like Gorilla Glass and all that business for the fronts of the phone, so I don't see why they can't apply it to the back.
Yeah.
And it looks nice and shiny, and it might get a bit fingerprinty, but, you know, I do like the look of it. So that's the biggest kind of aesthetic difference you can see. Inside the phone, you're looking at the new chip, which, as Glenn says, is just the upgrade. So you're talking about the A11 Bionic CPU, which is what it's called.
Which sounds powerful.
It sounds a bit meaty. It sounds a little bit, you know, David Cronenberg-y. If it's bionic, I'm expecting it to, you know, fuse with my body at a molecular genetic level.
Yeah, that's the future. Like, we won't be holding phones. That'd be ridiculous.
No, I just want it just wedged into my cheek. So I can just glance downwards at the side and then scream in existential terror at the horror I have become. So it's 6 cores. You've got two of them for doing high-performance tasks, like running 3D games and whatnot. These are 30% faster than the A10s from the previous phones, the iPhone 7, which means it'll run everything you need to and more, really. Like, they've always got a decent amount of power, the latest models. Not technically as much power, perhaps, as some of the super high-end Androids, but they always optimize the power that they use very well. So even though they don't necessarily have the same amount of grunt on paper, they generally perform very well in benchmarking tests, as they're good with making use of things like multi-threading and other terms I only slightly understand. So you've got that to look forward to there. We don't know about the RAM yet, if we're going to get really techy, but our guess is kind of maybe 2 on the 8, but probably 3 on the 8S, or 8 Plus, rather. I always get confused between the two. We've upped the spec of the minimum storage, so we're at 64 gig minimum internal storage now, all the way up to 525, that would be impressive.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
256 gigabytes is the high-end model. So gone are the days of the iPhone 5 and their 8 gigabyte storage, which now probably holds an MP3.
Yes.
An extreme MP3 encoded song on Spotify. That's all you can fit on there now.
It's nice to see 64 gigabyte become the standard, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Like, it takes a while for these things to kind of creep up on you, but when I originally got the 8 gig, it's like, I'm not really using it for music. I've got an iPod. I'll just take the odd photo. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then after like a year and a half, it's like, God, I can't do anything on this phone. I have to uninstall every app I have. And
yeah.
it became impossible to manage. So now, even running at 32 gig, within the first day, I'm down to about 7 gig left.
Right.
But luckily on the Xiaomi, you can put in external memory, so I can take it up to 128 in a flip. You don't get that with the Apple OS phones. You've got to stick with the internal memory. There's no external storage. So you probably do want to make sure you've got at least 64. And they've come around with that. So that's good. And they've got camera tweaks and all that business. And you can see the full conference for how it lets you do fancy things with recognizing the foregrounds from the backgrounds and all that. But basically, it's the standard upgrade you'd expect.
Yes.
Now, where things get a little bit new tech and a little bit premiere, I suppose, prestige, is the iPhone X, which is this anniversary super deluxe edition that they've released. And the big thing that they've been trumpeting since the announcement and that we've been anticipating is the full screen. So this phone is more screen than it is handset. It is essentially just a big old thing with no buttons on it, on the front anyway, and it's got a slightly weird shape because of all the sensors in the top. When you saw it up and working and running, did you think, oh baby, I got to have this in my hand right now, or were you like, it's all right?
Oh god, I don't actually know. This is an interesting question. Well, I mean, ultimately, I feel like I can live without it, because I don't really need... I'm still really happy with my iPhone 6S. I still don't feel the need to upgrade from that. Like, every game I download, like, runs just fine. I've got enough storage. And, yeah, it still functions perfectly for me. So I think, you know, I can look at the iPhone X and just be like, yeah. I mean, it's definitely pretty. I've just got, like, a bit mixed feelings about it. Like... One thing I feel is like Apple have already sort of been the guys who want to create the just the best in class thing.
Yes.
And they've had that for years, but recently we, as you've pointed out yourself, like a lot of companies, like Android manufacturers, have sort of been creeping up on them. You've got Samsung have been doing some quite amazing things the last few years.
The 8 is apparently a phenomenal phone.
Yeah.
The OnePlus 5 is apparently also incredible. And then you had Google stepping in with its Pixel phones as well, all trying to pitch themselves at that premier iPhone kind of quality and price level.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of competition now. So Apple kind of, with the 10-year of the iPhone, they did kind of need to make a statement. Like, you know, we still know how to make a gorgeous, you know, a technically impressive phone.
Mm.
And they've pulled that off. In many ways, like kind of similar to what what's his face, Steve Jobs did back when he made the first, was it the iMac he made, that really impressive, expensive thing that no one bought.
yeah,
and that's that's kind of what I feel like is going to happen here. Like the question for the iPhone X really has to answer is it just a vanity project? Like, are you just going to be buying this phone because you've got the money to spend on that phone and it's gorgeous and you want to kind of show off? Or does it offer anything that is worth that money?
Well, what it does offer that other phones don't offer is this 3D facial unlock feature. So even though the entire phone is a screen and there is now no home button, it's all done with gestures and bits and bobs. What we've all heard, and I'm sure you've heard as well if you're listening, is you can look at the phone and it fires a whole bunch, like 2 million dots at your face or some stupidly high number. It's probably only a couple of hundred. And it identifies your mug, which has become accustomed to you because you teach it your face, and then it unlocks without the need for you to, you know, do a fingerprint or type in a password or something like that. It does this in any light condition. It fires little beams of light at your face. It looks, you know, it doesn't need to be done in full midday sunny glare. You can unlock it anywhere, apparently, even though it didn't actually work when they demoed it at the beginning of the thing at the conference, but apparently that was because too many people had played about with it backstage and it had gone into lockdown mode. That's the excuse that they gave.
Amazing.
Which I may or may not believe. So that's one of the big things. They're going, look at this, isn't this incredible? It scans your face and unlocks a thing. So that's a thing it offers that other phones don't in quite the same way. It then uses that same technology, that same facial scanning technology, to do what got the biggest applause and the biggest cheers, I think, when the convention was taking place, and that was Animojis. They were losing their minds over the ability to basically talk at the phone and then have all of your facial movements, gestures and expressions transposed onto the face of a poo.
I can live without it, I'll be honest, for that
how
money.
How can you live without this, Glenn? How can you go on another day knowing that your face could be animating an emoji turd? I don't understand you, man.
I'm sorry, James. I'm obviously some sort of loser, but you know,
I
that
thought
doesn't
I knew you.
Thrill me. Does it thrill you? Is that enough for you to spend $1,000 on a phone, James?
Oh, God. No, it's lame, isn't it? Well, no, it's not. So what we have here, well, let's talk about just the facial unlock thing first. For me, the facial unlock thing makes a good video, and it's a cool thing to say, and it's one of those things that might be fun to demo once in the same way as like using Siri or going, okay, Google, and all that, where you use it a couple of times and go, huh, voice control, awesome. And then after that, I'm not sure if facial unlock is the answer to a question that nobody's asked. It is a solution in search of a problem for me.
I don't know.
Because
I kind of disagree with you. That I was going to say, like, what we kind of want from any sort of unlocking technology is just the easiest possible solution.
Yes.
And I know fingerprint unlocking wasn't perfect. Like, there's many times where, like, I pull my finger on it, and it's just like, oh, it doesn't recognize your what's it called?
Fingerprint.
Yeah, that's the one. It doesn't recognize
it. You've been using your nose, haven't you, Glenn? This is you've been falling down.
Yeah, there's loads of times it's gone wrong for me, and I was always just kind of like, God, this is so annoying, and then I have to fill in my PIN instead. and I feel like, you know, it can't get my face wrong, surely. It can't misread my face, so that's kind of good. And I feel like while it's exciting now, it's going to become the standard for all phones soon enough. Like, I think the iPhone 9 Well, actually, there won't be an iPhone 9 because they've skipped that. The iPhone 11, I guess, will be the standard model. I don't know how they're going to go ahead in the future. It's all it's all gone crazy.
When you hit 10 already, it's like, oh, damn, what do you do?
Yeah.
But they could argue X is X, not 10, but who knows? See, yeah. I'm not convinced by that. When I see the demos going on, I'm like, how is this quicker than using my finger? I, for the first time, activated the fingerprint ID on the Xiaomi. I've always sort of shied away from using biometric stuff because I don't like the idea of putting my fingerprint on record and then sending it up into the cloud any more than I like the idea of them scanning in the full three-dimensional aspect of my face with or without beard and analyzing all the potential changes my face can go through and then sending that information to Apple, which makes me uneasy, as it did with things like the Kinect, which is effectively what this is. They've taken the Kinect, that thing that basically everyone hated on the Xbox, and made it the new feature for the phone, which is like, I don't know if that blinks a slight warning sign in my head, but again, what I say is, when I was looking at it, I'm watching them do the conference, and you hold up the phone to your face and it waits for a couple of seconds, then it unlocks, and I'm like, I'm holding the phone with my hands. The fingerprint sensors for most things now, certainly Android stuff, it's on the back rather than the front. So the Xiaomi's got it on the front. The back. So you use like your forefinger rather than your thumb to unlock it. And when you hold your phone, your finger's there anyway. So yeah, it's just like, I just pick up the phone and bam, it's unlocked.
Do you ever have problems with it though? No, it's
actually very good. No, I really don't. It just unlocks. I've not had any issues with it so far. And it's quicker. It's quicker than standing there holding it for my face for a few seconds, making sure I'm looking at it properly and not side-eyeing it or anything like that. Like, all that's... It's not much of a difference, but it's a difference. And to me, it just feels like, well, that's a neat gimmick, but is it something that's actually needed, or is it solving a problem that's really there? Because the problem that's really there is, well, we need a safe, secure system for our phones. And fingerprints are... To me, it's a quicker way. If you're going to go down the biometric route, which is what this is, it's a quicker way of doing it. It's also more foolproof because, as even Apple conceded during the event itself, like, hey, this is amazing. No one will be able to unlock your phone unless you've got an evil twin. And it's like, right. Yeah. So you can technically, there's a little chink in the armor there. Whereas even if you're an evil twin, your fingerprints are still different. So fingerprints beat that originally. The other thing people have pointed out is, like, when it comes to security aspects, and I realize this is a little bit sort of on the extreme end of the spectrum, but the idea that if someone's taking your phone off of you and they're like, unlock your phone, you're like, no, I'm not going to unlock it, and you've got your hands clamped behind your back, and technically the police can't make you, like, put your hand on the phone to unlock it. They can just hold it up to your face and unlock your phone without your permission, if you see what I mean.
Also, I'm just thinking, like, you know, you can use it for purchases. What if you accidentally tap you want to buy something and then the registration thing comes through and then it's like, oh, you've bought it and you just didn't have anything to do with it.
And it just has this record of you with a look of shock on your face as you go, no, to try and not buy the £1,000 thing. And that's what it puts next to your receipt. That's what I'd like, a little picture of your face at the time of buying to see if you've regret on it already.
I would love that.
Now, that's a very extreme thing. Because we are nerds, I am impressed with the tech, and it is cool. And you do look at it and go, yeah, but, you know, obviously I'm excited by this stuff because this is what we do. And, you know, anything like that, you can't help but go like, this is future, this is Minority Report, this is cool. But there's always that bit at the back of my head, which is like, is this something I actually need in my life? Or is this one of those things where you'll be like, look, check this out, this is awesome, and then immediately forget about and think, was that really worth an extra, like... You know, compared to what I spent for my phone, is that worth an extra £600 for that? Really?
Exactly. You know, when you're like having that chat with friends at school, and you're like, "What is the most expensive computer we could build if money wasn't an object?" And you come up with this really ridiculous supercomputer that just has tech you just don't need, and it's ridiculous. That's kind of what Apple have done, but then they've gone and made it and are releasing it now. It's crazy.
So there's that element, there's the facial recognition unlocking, and then there's the emojis, which, again, it makes a very, very good demo of him standing up there, like the one-to-one reproduction of the face when you see the dude talking and you see the little fox or whatever mimicking the motions, like when you see someone doing a behind-the-scenes footage on, you know, movies and CGI. it's very good. It's very, very impressive. As people pointed out, it's like, this is as good facial capture, if not better, than you got from films 10 years ago. Like, and it's your phone doing it. That, it is well impressive.
Yes.
However, it is something of a parlor trick, where it's like, I'm going to send myself a message of, send my partner a message of a little, I don't know, smiley making faces or whatever character I superimpose. And again, neat little gimmick, but I, you know, I'm not that fussed by it, really. I don't think anyone's going to be super impressed by me doing it. The other thing it offers is the idea that there's no home button. Everything is done by gestures now, so you're swiping up from the bottom of the screen to unlock and to access things. This has been done before. There are buttonless screens, and you can get a lot of them. I'm looking, because I investigated the Chinese market for this Android purchase. There's quite a lot of Blueboo, or whatever the names are. Like, there's a lot of other brands which have already been tinkering around with this basically entire screen phone thing. Obviously, they don't look quite as slick as the iPhone X, which does look lovely. And the screen itself is even higher resolution than the screen on the 8 and the 8 Plus. So it's much more like a 4K screen rather than Retina.
Yeah, which is nice. That is a nice touch, to be fair.
And it looks gorgeous. And for the first time, they've gone... fucking hell. I'm going to have to look at the thing now. I want to say AMOLED or OLED. There you go. I'll say it again. The first time, they've gone with an OLED panel, which gives you the much, much stronger contrast, million-to-one contrast ratio, in fact. And HDR, which is the high dynamic range stuff that 4K TVs have adopted to make stuff really, really pop on the screen. All of which is really nice. I don't plan on watching any movies on a phone because I don't like that. So, shrug.
It does make games look nice. Like, I remember playing Limbo on a OLED screen on an Android, and I was just like, this is absolutely amazing. I was blown away by it.
You get the pure black and pure white, and it's stuff odd. Pops.
It's so nice.
Yeah. So, I agree with you there. Like, it will look nicer, and anything that makes your phone stand out in daylight, that's great. That's cracking stuff. Love it. The thing that was sort of brought to our attention was that when you look at the specs, the 10 is actually running off, as far as we know, the same architecture as the 8 and the 8 Plus.
Yeah.
So it's got the same Bionic chip, the A11 Bionic chip inside it. We don't know about the RAM, but we reckon it's probably the same RAM as at least the 8 Plus. But the 10 is going to have to do more work than the 8 Plus is, because it's got more pixels to push around on the screen. So that takes up a little bit more processing power. It's also got all that Bionic tech to deal with. It's got the fancier camera for taking selfies, which allows you that selfie portrait technology and everything. So there's a chance, we haven't been able to benchmark it because obviously we haven't got them yet, there's a chance that the 8 Plus might run a little bit faster than the X.
Yeah, which would be odd.
That would be really weird. I mean, I'd be surprised if that's the way that they've done it, but it's looking at it on paper, it looks like it should. It looks like the 8S has got less to do, like just to keep the phone running. So it should have more, like, memory free and that sort of thing.
If it is the case, Apple will probably just justify it by saying, yeah, but you've got all this wonderful technology that's completely worth it in the 10. But yeah, I mean, I imagine they'll probably be quite consistent with each other, because I can't imagine Apple would accept, you know, that people are going to get in and do all these benchmark tests and go, the 8 is more value for money. They'll probably get annoyed about that, so they'll probably find some way of optimizing it so that it just runs just as nicely as the 8 does, if it isn't any different whatsoever.
So what we've got is three phones that are very similar on the inside. The big difference is the externals. For the X, and it's a lovely looking thing. Like, they've done really well. It has that premium sheen that people have come to associate with Apple, and, you know, the prestige handset that you get because you can. And that's where we start getting into pricing. So, as you mentioned, the 8 and the 8 Plus are continuing on with the similar price tag that the 7 and the 7 Plus had. So you're looking at kind of 649 entry, I think, is it? 649 or 699 entry level? Yeah, £699 or $699 in the US, which is more than the iPhone 7 started at. So it's $50 more, or £100 more, thank you, Brexit, if you're in the UK. But you could argue that the entry-level iPhone 8 has double the storage. So the iPhone 7 launched with 32, this launched with 64, so there's maybe where your extra money is going. But that's still a little bit more. It's £700, basically. And then the 8 Plus starts at £799, so it's £100 more for that bigger screen, that, you know, souped-up model. When it comes to the X, there's a big jump. $999 is the entry level for the X. That's a lot. That's £1,000 for the same interior phone, just with the fancier screen on it and the face unlocking. That then goes up to around like $1,200 if you want the maximum memory, if you want the 256 gigabyte memory range. So £1,200. So, like, we're approaching iMac territory, aren't we? MacBook territory, rather.
Yes, definitely.
For your phone. Now, do you think that what the phone offers, the X offers, is worth the extra £200 to potentially £400 from just the iPhone 8?
Judging from what I know about it, you know, specifications-wise and what it offers, I really don't. I just see it as kind of like a vanity project. Like, because I kind of compare it to the Xbox One X and the PS4 Pro, in the sense that potentially it should offer more for your money, but you're getting something substantial, like, or tangible is a better word. Like, with PS4 Pro, you're getting 4K gaming. That's like an actual tangible thing. You say, this is why you're, where the extra, is it £150 extra for PS4 Pro?
Oh, no, it's only like 100, because around about 100. You can get them for about 320 now, and you can get the PS4 standard for about, you know, 200 with a game or so. Yeah, so it's true. A little bit more than that. But as you say, it's got more...
A tangible benefit, yeah.
Yeah, it's got more RAM, you're paying for better hardware.
Yeah, and you're either, if you've got a 1080p TV, so you're getting generally better performance out of your games, slightly better visuals. If you've got a 4K TV, you're getting 4K. That's like... definite. Same with the Xbox One X, although, you know, it's not out yet. It pretty much promises the same thing. But with the iPhone 10, it's the same internals as the 8. It's like £400 more. And while it has got some fancy tech that's pretty cool, I don't think any of it really justifies the price. And I honestly can't see anyone like that who hasn't just got ridiculous amounts of money to spend. Buying it, like it doesn't seem to me like the logical money smart person's phone choice. Like you'd even be fine getting on with like a 7 these days, or even a 6S. So like buying iPhone 10, like what are you really getting out of it, other than just saying I'm rich, I've got this iPhone 10? You might as well buy a diamond encrusted phone. Like that's essentially what you're getting.
Well, I think you're right. I think that is what you're getting out of it. I think this is now a prestige phone. And it's in many ways what the iPhone used to be. To me, this feels like a return to that idea of, like, if you buy an iPhone, it's the super premier handset. It used to cost much more than... We're talking, like, go back to, you know, 2009, 10, 11, when the early days are around the 4s and stuff like that, and you're comparing an iPhone, which costs like, you know, £500-600, to the comparable Android phones, which were like half the price. And so there was this need to justify it. It's like, yes, it costs twice as much, but look at all this, you know, you're buying an iPhone. That's why it costs twice as much. You cannot beat this build. You cannot beat those ergonomics, that design. You're buying into the Apple promise, to the cult of Apple, as people always say. In recent years, that distinction between the two things has become a lot less obvious. Like because of the phones we mentioned earlier, like the Pixel and the OnePlus 5 and all that, which are now all offering these actually very, very slick, very well presented, very well built designs, which have a lot of power in them and end up costing around about the same. So now it's this idea of, like, if you buy an iPhone, is it actually the best phone on the market anymore? Maybe it's not. Maybe you can buy an Android phone that's as good as, if not better, in terms of both performance and ergonomics design. Like, as these phones are kind of like, you see someone with the OnePlus 5 now and you're like, fair play, that's a good phone.
Yeah.
Like, whereas before it was all about, you got the iPhone or it's just something else. You know, and it didn't have that cachet.
I don't think Apple is like releasing this under the assumption that it is going to send like, make loads of money for them that's going to sell loads. I don't think that's what they're doing. I think they're essentially just flexing their muscles, and I don't really hate the idea of that. I mean, they've kind of done it throughout their career, you know, back in the days of the Mac and stuff. Like I said, Steve Jobs especially was a big fan of like just churning the, like just doing ridiculous things that cost a lot of money because he could, and because like, you know, he wanted to push the world forward. And I think in many ways it's sort of just a mission statement from Apple, isn't it? So reminding everyone what they're all about, and you know, that they're what they're capable of, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It might even just push the mobile tech world just a little bit faster, like, you know, as other people like Samsung are going to scramble to catch up.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're necessarily wrong. I don't think it's going to sell like billions. I think what it is, it's almost an answer to the phones that they've released, which were like a step down. Because previously what they did was, you know, Steve Jobs famously was like, no, we're not going to release iPad minis. We're not going to release like cheaper versions of the iPhone. It's an iPhone. It's expensive. It's premium. That's what it is. And then they went, all right, then we'll release the iPad mini and we'll release the iPhone 5C, like with a plastic back. And here are going to be the budget cut price models for people who, so that you can get into the Apple family at a cheaper price. This is the opposite of that. This is like, okay, here's your base model. It costs £700, a lot of money. And then here is our platinum tier, like silly money version. Only the creme de la creme need apply. And it is exactly like you said. It's people who just have money to spend, money to waste, like money to throw at this stuff. So they can go, I've got the new iPhone X, and get back some of that smug Apple cachet that people used to have in the old days. It used to be what, in some ways, Apple was kind of about.
Yes.
Like, I have the best phone. Do you have the best phone? No. I have the best phone.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's kind of telling that they launched it alongside an iPhone 8 as well. Because like it just kind of shows to me that they don't... Well, I mean if they had complete faith in their product that it was going to sell bucket loads regardless, they would have just released the iPhone 10. But they've released it alongside the 8 because I think they know. They know fine well it's not going to be the big seller this year. They know they need that 8 to keep sales ticking along as they have been, because it's you know, I mean, like to me, if they'd released like an iPhone 5S SE upgrade as well, like with the same internals,
oh yeah, well, the little mini version,
actually been the biggest seller out of all of them.
I like that little model, because again, when they released the SE, it's like, hey, it looks like the 4S, which is the phone that I like. So I was a big fan of that, even though I've now moved over to a big kind of note-sized phone, a big, you know, 5.5-inch beast. I do like those smaller form factors. They are quite nice.
Yeah, me too.
But it was certainly an interesting turnout. I'm impressed, like I'm sure you are, with like the technical dazzle of it all,
of
it. When you break it down and like, do I need the talking face-matching emojis? Probably not. No. And is facial unlock that much better than fingerprint ID? Is it faster? Is it quicker? I don't think it will be. So in those senses, they feel like advancements for the sake of advancement, for the sake of like, ooh, look at this, look what we can do, like you say. And for me, practically, I don't really need that. But I do think it captures people's imagination. When you saw people like go mental when they do the demonstration of the animojis, it's an impressive demonstration. It does make you go, ooh, that's magic, you know. It captures people's imagination, and that is partly what Apple were traditionally about, going, hey, look at this thing, you know. When the first time they demonstrated the touch screen, you know, people went mental, like, because we'd not seen that before used on a phone, and it really was the thing. And it changed everything. That was their like gimmick at the time, was like, Apple iPhone, this changes everything. That was the slogan. And you know what, they were right. It changed everything is now a touchscreen. BlackBerry is dead. So that kind of stuff can really, really work. I don't think this is going to have the same kind of seismic impact, but it does have that same idea of like, look at us, we're doing this cool kind of this magic trick where we're teasing your imagination with something a little bit different. I can't afford one.
No.
And I doubt loads of our listeners will be able to afford one, or will necessarily think that it's worth it. But I can understand why they've gone this way and do something to mark the anniversary and remind everybody that Apple is about making the prestige phone, the prestige handset that causes a little bit of envy when other people see you using it. And I think that's what this might be for. It's what it might do.
The question is, though, James, when you see someone pull out an iPhone 10, are you going to be like, oh, God, I wish I had one? Or are you going to think, what a mug? I'm probably going to think the latter.
I will think that person probably has a nice car.
Yeah.
And a nice house and doesn't need to worry about paying their gas bill.
Yeah, and what a mug, you know what? James.
good for them.
Yeah.
You know, whatever makes you happy, whatever brings a smile to your face in this crazy old world. So,
sure enough.
If you want to find out all about it, even more stats and details, we've got all the information over on PG. The iPhone X is not going to be available to pre-order until October the 27th. It'll come out on November the 3rd, whereas the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus are out for pre-order today, September the 15th, as we record this, and will start to hit stores on the 22nd next week. So look out for them new phones in the wild and try and keep those eyes from going all green when you see them, or rolling back into your head. One of the two. Out and about this week, we're going to start with the big iOS release for this week. And for me, one of the big releases this year I've been waiting for a long time now, Iron Marines is out on iPhone and iPad and Android. The developers of Kingdom Rush have come back with their new IP. It's a sci-fi game instead of a fantasy one. It's an RTS instead of a tower defense. And it is fantastic. Which is very good news for me and everybody else.
So, yeah, I still haven't played this one yet. I loved Kingdom Rush, so I'm going to dig into it over the weekend. But how does it sort of differ?
Well, you're looking at much more freedom of movement. If you play Kingdom Rush, you'll know that it's about adding building towers, essentially. Tower defense game, you build towers on set points through the map. Waves of enemies come at you, and you have to keep upgrading the towers again and again to make sure that you can fend off the advancing waves. This, much more like a traditional RTS, much more like a StarCraft or a, you know, Command and Conquer or whatever you want to, whichever franchise you want to pick, where you have to build up bases. I say bases because then sometimes you're actually not just building up one big base and then sending an army out. You're actually building up lots of different nodes all over the map. So you need to build up your main base. You need to build machine gun ports and turrets, which you then upgrade, both the base's defenses and the turret's capabilities. You then have a little spawn point from which your troops can emerge once you've got the available points to spend on them, which you accumulate over time. You can get some rangers and snipers and standard armored units. You can get big APCs that stomp about, which breathe fire and have, you know, big old missile launchers and all that kind of stuff. So you don't end up with loads and loads of troops. It is obviously streamlined, because when you're talking about things like StarCraft and RTSs, what comes into my mind is big armies. You know, loads and loads, tens and tens, if not hundreds of troops, which you're just like mass selecting and dragging across the map to come bearing down on your enemy. This isn't this. This is building up like squads of three, and you get like a few squads of three different types of troops, but it maxes out. You can only have a certain number on the map. These gain as you play through and open up different areas, but you never end up with squads of hundreds and hundreds. Like, it's always a manageable number. And this is important because, A, you need to be able to complete it in a reasonable space of time, and B, you're playing on a touchscreen. And if you have hundreds and hundreds of troops, it's going to get really fiddly to try and select them and make them do what you want them to do. And it sidesteps that really neatly. So it's a case of putting your finger on one of the groups of troops and then just dragging, a little line appears, and then you release and they will walk to that area. That's all you really need to worry about. They've got hero characters, like you have with Kingdom Rush, which you can upgrade, and you can choose from quite a wide selection. They've all got different skills, and you unlock them as you go through the game and upgrade them accordingly. There is, I think it's 14 levels in the main campaign, with little side missions that appear as you go through. So it adds up to 22 or 24 in total, which might not sound like a lot, but they're quite involved. So I've, you know, when I got up to level, like, you know, I was capturing the video, I was playing level like 5 or something, and it took about 25 minutes to complete it, the one level. And that was after a few playthroughs of like working out what I need to do and how I need to build up these levels. So they are not the quickest of levels to play. but obviously a lot generally much shorter than if you're playing a level of fucking StarCraft or something like that. It's got the same style of presentation as Kingdom Rush. It's got that cartoony style with that slight tongue-in-cheek sense of humour. When you click on troops, they give you little sci-fi tropes. One of the heroes, who's a lassie with a big rocket pack and almost looks a little bit like Ripley strapped into the loader machine, the sort of mech bodysuit, does a kind of "get away from her, you..." and little, you know, little nods. There are really cute figures that appear around the map. So you'll look up on a hill at one point and there'll just be like a little red-shirted dude who looks like he's from Star Trek, just standing there.
Cool.
And they're just there, but if you tap on him, he kind of like does a little salute and then goes and vanishes, is teleported out. It doesn't do anything, it's just there. And it echoes some of the little pop culture nods that they did in Kingdom Rush. And it's, you know, it's just in the background, but it's a nice little touch, attention to detail. It's tough. It's a challenging game, even on easy difficulty mode. It is tough. And you have to be aware of what you're trying to do. You have to have a strategy. You have to make sure that you're upgrading the right stuff at the right time, and there are different upgrade trees you can go down. And you need to be aware of what's coming in order to fight it off. So way more depth than you would expect from an RTS, while still managing to streamline it so it works on mobile. I'm already in love with it. Everyone I've talked to who's played it thinks it's fantastic. It's gone through the roof in terms of reviews on both iOS and Android. It's £4.99 or $4.99. There are in-app purchases that you can buy, but they are by no means things you have to or even should buy. They are there to, if you want to unlock some heroes, basically. And you can buy extra powers that you can use, but if you're odd, you won't. Like, you will just work it out and you'll play it yourself. It's well balanced. It's not trying to stitch you with this stuff. It's supposed to be tough, and you'll get the most satisfaction probably from not paying anything. It's really not essential, but it's just for people who are like, I want to immediately unlock all 12 heroes rather than earn them myself. So don't be put off by that. I think it's an essential purchase. You can see a video review if you're unsure up on AppSpy, and obviously our written review over on PG. But Iron Marines, it's the thing, and it's well worth your time and your money. Now, sweet. Glenn, you've been playing some Switch business.
Yes, I have. Two big releases from this week I've been playing are Rayman Legends, which is the biggest release, and Kingdom New Lands, which was on iOS originally, and Steam, I think, as well.
That's right,
It's now on Switch. And both were great. Shall I start with Rayman Legends?
Go on then. So this is, I forget, is this the first or, no, it's the second one, isn't it?
Second
Origins
one, yeah.
Was first, Legends was the second one that appeared on PS3 and all that era.
That's right, yeah. So this was actually originally going to be a Wii U, what's it called? Exclusive,
wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Until the Wii U was a catastrophic failure. And Ubisoft didn't want to just lose money on it. Poor Wii U.
Yeah.
And it's true. It's good. It's a really good port. I haven't had any problems with it with like lagging or anything like that. It runs beautifully. And I actually think, the Wii U version is still the best version of it. I played that one back in the day because it has the touchscreen stuff, which is fun. Like there are sections of the game where you take, rather than play as Rayman, you play as, I think he's called Murphy, the little flying green dude. And you have to sort of tap things on the second screen while Rayman runs around doing like levels. Rayman moves automatically in these sections, and you just sort of use the stylus to tap on things on the screen to like move levers and whack enemies and stuff. And in this version, which I'm sure is a lot like the PS4 and Xbox One versions, Murphy does his, well, you don't control Murphy anymore, you control Rayman. You just press A on the controller at any point to make Murphy do something.
Gotcha.
It's a shame because, while obviously if the Switch is docked, you couldn't do that because the controller hasn't got any touchscreen on it at all. So like when it's docked, I can kind of understand that. But when I played handheld mode, I kind of would prefer to have, you know, reverted back to that original Wii U version, and because it has a touchscreen and you use the touchscreen for some parts of the game, like scratching out the scratch cards. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't control Murphy using that. It was still the same as docked.
Okay,
like it's not a massive disappointment. It would have been like a nice nod to the Wii U version as well. And they could have even given you an option of turning it on and off. That would have been nice, but they've kind of ignored it entirely, and I think that's a tiny bit of a shame. But other than that, like I think Switch is a great platform for it. Like I played it on the coach coming back from London the other day, and I just felt like it was like kind of a great handheld game, because the levels themselves are actually really short. Yeah,
there's lots like of 3 minutes, them, right? But they're all bite size.
Exactly, and that's great for a mobile platform, isn't it? Mm. You can just sort of dip in when you've got like a. Actually, I found myself just playing a level before I go to bed, like in those sort of 2 minutes, because I'm one of those weird people who can play games and then sleep immediately. But like, I find myself just doing that.
How you do that?
Yeah, I don't know either. But it's just perfect for that. Like, your level's over within like 3 to 5 minutes, and you can just sort of put it down and move on with your life. So like, it seems just sort of tailor made for mobile, even though it wasn't.
Yeah, I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's got that mobile bite sized design.
Yeah, definitely.
And it just looks gorgeous, and you know, there was no worry about it running badly on the Switch because it's an old enough game, and it just already looked incredible.
You say that, but Eurogamer have run sort of a piece on how it doesn't run as well as the other versions, and I just thought kind of felt that. Yeah, it was really weird because I kind of think that's incredibly unfair, seeing as you're comparing it to like a PS4, which is a massive brick under your TV, and the Switch is a nice sleek little handheld. So even if it does run slightly worse, it's certainly not running in like 1 FPS or something. Like it, I haven't noticed any drops, and it's probably running at like 30. Haven't looked into it, but it's very, very consistent. It looks gorgeous. I'm pretty sure it's running in the full 720p when docked. I believe it looks HD, so it looks 1080 when it's docked. I think it's running like, you know, 30 FPS in both modes. It's perfect. It doesn't stall and loading times don't feel very long. I'm sure it's not as good as PS4 and Xbox One version, but like we said, it's like the Switch is much smaller and less capable than them. But portable.
Okay. Well, no, I'd like to play it on that platform. As you say, it seems perfectly suited to portable stuff. Yeah. So what have they priced it at? Do you know?
I believe £30. Let me just double check.
That's quite a lot for a game that's... Ooh, because, I mean, that's been out on PS3 for ages. You know,
it has,
you can get that for like £3 secondhand. £30's quite a lot.
Yeah, it's just 26 on Amazon, which is usually and it doesn't say like down from anything, so I assume that's the price. But it's not so bad, I think. Like, there's a lot of game there. Remember, there's 870 odd like of those blue things to collect, whatever they're called, teensies.
And looms. You know, oh no, not looms. The other things.
Yeah, looms are the yellow things. Yeah,
yeah.
And then you've got a lot. I was just going to say you've got a lot of Origins levels as well, so you're kind of getting two games in one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And it is a great game. It's just I worry what people are prepared to spend. But
It's a lot of money, but it'll come down.
You've got that then to look forward to. And the other one is the port of Kingdom
Newlands.
Newlands, yeah.
Now, that one is a great port as well. It looks just as good as it does on the phone, really, because it's a nice looking pixelated game.
Pixel art thing.
Yeah, exactly. But like having. I don't know, having physical buttons obviously is just such an improvement. And it's a bigger screen than your phone as well, so it's just nice. It's a nice thing to shove in your face as you're, you know, in bed and just messing around. It runs nicely on the platform. I have had a few problems with it. One time my save got corrupted and I had to sort of delete my save and start again.
Yeah,
it's weird because I haven't really noticed that on any other game on the platform, so... it could be something that was just happens one time and they can fix, but that was a bit strange. And then sort of I mentioned this to the developer as well, like the frame rate itself isn't consistent. Like, it's not bad, and I don't think many people are going to, like, you know, be turned off playing it because of it, but like when I'm running around, I kind of feel like it's a bit choppy, like especially in sort of forested areas. It just feels like it's constantly loading in the background. It's slightly off-putting.
We should point out that the game itself, it's almost a bit like Tower Defense-y in a weird way, where you're just scrolling backwards and forwards on the back of a horse, recruiting peasantry and whatnot to come back and start building up your it's like a village or a little town that gradually grows, and then night comes and evil things start creeping towards you and they have to defend themselves sort of automatically, but you're just throwing coins at peasants and going, you, back to the shack and build me a roof.
Yeah.
But it's this beautiful 2D pixel art style, and the weather's constantly changing and it's going from night to day, and it's just unusual mood and tone to it all that's quite sort of wistful and fantastical, and I really liked it. It was kind of fun.
Yes, it's great, yeah.
So that's £10.99 or £14.99 on the Switch.
Not bad.
Not bad. What else have we got? Quickly before we go, because we realise it's a longer podcast, but, you know, iPhone X's don't launch every day. Opus Rocket of Whispers, which is from Sogono, and is a sort of spiritual successor to Opus something else. I forget what the subtitle is, but I haven't played that one. I have played this, however. It's a really unusual game that mixes like narrative and top-down exploration elements. The elevator pitch is... you have to help a witch who's good at building rockets to assemble a rocket by wandering around a post-apocalyptic snowy environment, gathering resources so that you can send the souls of ghosts to the moon.
Yeah, sounds good.
It's weird. It's. I'm pretty sure the developers are like Japanese. It's been translated, and the translation's a bit iffy. But the idea is fascinating. Like, and it starts off through storybook style storytelling. So it's just got, you know, still images, and the main character, the protagonist, is like a kid before the apocalypse, and they're sending out rockets up into space for dead people. And this is just the thing that they do, like a Viking funeral, if you like. And there are 12 witches at any one time in the world, and this is their role. They help send spirits to their peace in the stars. Then the apocalypse happens, and now there's only one witch doing this, and you're trying to help her out, and presumably this will somehow sort the world out. The way the gameplay actually plays is when you're wandering around, it's a top-down exploration game. You're going into houses, you're finding the bits and pieces that they need, then you're returning to the base, giving them to this witch character. She doesn't look like a witch, by the way. She's just a woman in like a parka in the snow. And you're building this rocket bit by bit by bit, and then eventually you'll get to launch it up. And in the meantime, you're kind of uncovering information about how the world came to be this way and what caused the plague, as it's referred to. It's unusual and sort of as this... strange, like, spiritual undertone to it. It's not, yeah, quite unlike anything I've played before. It's about, I've played about 35-40 minutes of it, so I can't give a hugely in-depth summary of where it goes, but I'd quite like to play a little bit more of it. We don't have the pricing yet, because I think it's out today, or just came out yesterday, or something like that, but when we wrote the articles for it, it wasn't actually available. But you can see the video for it up on Apps by now. It's called Opus Rocket of Whispers. And if you like your games a bit sleepy and non-combat-y and more story-driven, you might be encouraged to go and take a look at it. I've also got a game called Sprinkles, or S-P-R-N-K-L-S, Sprinkles. No, yes.
Vowels, is it?
Yeah, no vowels need apply. Which is a block match 3 puzzler with a bit more maths in it. I haven't actually played it, but you can see some info and a trailer up on it on PG. It's a free-to-play game that's out on iOS, but not on Android. However, Android, you lucky people, you're getting Cat Quest this week.
Yes, good game. Which is
a good game, which you did the review for, I think, didn't you? Someone did.
And no, I didn't. Yeah, I think it was Emily.
It was Emily. It's a really lovely Zelda-alike with production values that are through the roof. So you're just tromping about in this open world as a cat. Everything you encounter has got a cat pun in it. Like every place, every enemy, and it's adorable. The animation for your cat saving and returning to town is they take a cat nap. And you go to save, and he just stops and then goes whoop-boom and falls flat on his face. And that's the save animation. And it's adorable.
Yes.
Again, you can see a video for the review of this. You'll be sold within 2 seconds of seeing the thing running. It's so lovely. Plus, it's a really big world to explore. And it's quite well optimized for mobile. It was originally a Steam game. It's £4.79 over there on the Android, and obviously still available on iOS. So go and take a look at that. The new Sega release for this week, part of its Sega... what's it called? The Sega Free
Forever
thing? Yeah, Sega Forever. Crazy Taxi has gone free to play, so you can get that on iOS and Android. There's already been a port of this available, so they've just taken the original port and made it free to play and stuck some ads in it. You can take a look at it along with Space Harrier 2, which is a cool game that I remember from the Sega days. I haven't played this one on mobile yet, but you can give that a bash for free if you fancy a look at it. And finally, Yuri the Sprout of Lotus Creek.
I know, right? Odd name. It looks gorgeous, doesn't it?
It looks lovely. It's, again, not quite pixel art, more like 16-bit style, where it is a side-scrolling platformer which has got puzzles to solve in it. And so it almost looks a bit Prince of Persia-y in that way. So imagine that. I've yet to play it. It looks very nice in motion. It's £1.99 or $1.99, but we'll have a review of it probably up on PEG by the time you listen to this. Right. That was probably like an hour or something. That was the longest we've had in a long time.
It was.
iPhone X, y'all. So we had to talk it out. We had to work out what it was we think about this thing. Naturally, we will be covering all of this stuff in exquisite detail over on PG. And all the specs, like I say, are listed. So go and have a look. If you're going to go and buy one, let us know in the comments what you think about it. If you're going out there and getting an iPhone X, tell me if all that face unlocking business is worth it. Whether I'm being slightly cynical or whether it really is the future. And, you know, drag me by sending me a fox slagging me off animated.
Brilliant.
I thought you'd be all over this, given your... Like, people won't know this, but Glenn Fox's Skype and chat avatars is a little fox with a phone, headphones in, and what is it, a cappuccino or something?
Yes, because I love coffee. Obsessed.
Yeah, in his hand. So I figured, get that animated, get that sent to all your friends and see how long it is before they block you.
Fun.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Come back next week. I'll just be back from Finland, so excuse me if I've only played like 2 games, but we'll have more chat and whatnot on the next podcast, so come and join us then. See you next time, guys.
Thanks, bye-bye. Guys, bye.